time. Making a difference, one cup at a time. Tea time. So be sure to grab your tea, grab a seat, and tune in to Miss Liz. Tea time. Making a difference, one cup at a time.
Well, good evening and welcome to Tea Time. That's right, Miss Liz is back and we are doing evening tea time. We had this afternoon tea time with Alexi Brassi, who talked about kindness and the importance of being a good human being and all of her good work that she's been doing with the healthcare systems and that over the years. But now we have an incredible guest. We have Andrew Newman joining me and we're going to be talking about conscious bedtime stories. That's where we're going to talk about bedtime stories because we don't talk about that enough. And me and Alexi, we already agree with that this afternoon that we need to start bringing and connecting with our children a little bit more. So before we get started, we're going to do all the good stuff. We're going to get you over to Miss Liz's YouTube channel. Give that a quick subscribe. Ring that little doorbell so you'll be notified when these tea times go live. Check out the tea times at your own pace. And we're going to get started. We're going to do a disclaimer. We're going to do bio. Then we're going to get Andrew in here. And we're going to serve you a good cup of tea of touch, emotions, and attachments tonight. That's the type of tea we're selling tonight. We're not selling it. We're serving it. So grab your tea, grab your coffee, grab your water, grab your juice. You do not have to drink tea to listen to Tea Time with Miss Liz. So before we get going, let's get all that good stuff in there. Disclaimer for Miss Liz's Tea Time live show. Miss Liz, myself, is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any Tea Time show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith. However, it may bring forward dialogues and opinions that are not representative of my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the giving time of airing. All Tea Time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussions for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It's significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutical advice. If you have any questions about the disclaimer or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in tonight's show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you decide that the show is not made for you at this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later show at a later date and time. Again, all Tea Time shows are done on Thursdays, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If it's not a Thursday and you see Tea Time popping up, it's a rescheduled Tea Time or it's a returning guest that wants to have a second cup of tea with Miss Liz. So now a little bit on my guests. Well, Andrew Newman is the award-winning author and founder of ConsciousStories.com, a growing series of bedtime stories purpose-built to support parents-child connection in the last 20 minutes of the day. Andrew's a TEDx, Why the Last 20 Minutes of the Day Matters, weaves trauma, informs awareness, and attachment bonding into the wonders of story time, outlining the importance of quality connection before sleep for your child's ability to regulate, rest deeply, and wake up confident. He is a graduate of the Barbara Brennan School of Healing, a non-dual Kalabaskic, I'll get him to say because I don't want to mess it up, healer, and has been actively involved in men's work since 2006, facilitating men's groups in the Mankind Project and Soul Games. I'll get into that tonight with him as well. Andrew is a featured expert on Mind Valley Little Humans and has been opening speaker for Deepak Chopra, keynote speaker at Dr. Becky Bailey's Conscious Discipline Conference and author in residence at the Bixby School in Boulder, Colorado. He brings a calm yet playful energy to speaking events and workshops, inviting and encouraging the creativity of his audience, children's parents and teachers alike. So let me get Andrew in here and let me get some tea. So let me drop him in here. Welcome, Andrew.
Hey. Hey, so good to be with you.
I swear, sometimes I feel like a rambling little woodpecker, like dig, 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 dig. And I just watched Woody Woodpecker last night with my grandkid. You know, it all aligns. So, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
So, go ahead. Andrew, I want to get into who you were as a little boy and who you are now as a grown man, because you're writing bedtime stories. So there's an interesting little boy that we don't know about.
Yeah, very much. Where do we start? I'm South African. And so I was growing up in Cape Town, way back when, pretty much in the heart of the apartheid years. So it's, if I think back to five or six-year-old me, there's a mum and a dad, there's a sister, a family home, very loving and very, very supported. And zero emotional language. And I think that, I mean, I'm running around, I'm rambunctious, I'm playful, I'm at school, but mostly cautious, sensitive, trying to be a good boy, definitely controlled by the environment at the time. And a very joyful nature that I speak about in my TED talk that started to shift when I was about five, when I started to get a little bit serious. I got a fright, basically. I encountered death as a five-year-old for the first time, and I needed to make sense of that. And it kind of shifted my nature a little bit at that time. Yeah, 40-something years later, it's here we are.
Yeah, we don't give our ages away on this show, even though people have been trying to figure out. Well, I've been throwing a little bit of nuggets out there, how old Miss Liz is, for all my listening audience. So, but Andrew, having that fear at the age of five, is that what got you into writing today?
There's a line, you know, there's somewhere, if you drop into my stories and you read about the characters in the stories, you would probably get to know me quite well. Mm-hmm. It's not a straight line. It's a little smoke and mirrors, but you'd see the things that are important to my heart. And one of the books sitting behind me is The Boy Who Searched for Silence. I'm like, yeah, I was that kid, right? And there were instructions and advice, and there were too many things to try and work out. Where was safety? Where was there space for me to be me? And I wasn't super creative as a kid, and it wasn't nurtured. So I was in my early 30s when my personal crisis had led me to do my own work and my own studies and enter in healing schools. That's when my creativity got connected or reconnected for me, and where I started to find my voice and realize that I had a perspective that was interesting through words that I could then share. And then the stories started to come on their own accord.
Well, and I always tell this, my children and my grandchildren, words are important, and you can really impact lives with words. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always about the words causing harm. The words also educate. They also open the mind and bring different perspectives, because you can give an apple to one kid and a kid will look at it as a piece of fruit, and then you give that apple to another kid and they're like, oh, where are we going? This is an adventure. Like, you know what I mean? The different perspectives of seeing things. And I love the titles of your books. Like, I was like, oh, that's really cool. As a grandma, like it's really cool to hear the titles of the books and that.
No, the Hug Who Got Stuck is probably the kid's favorite. That's our bestseller. Just for folks who haven't seen the collection before, we've mentioned The Boy Who Searched for Silence. There's now 23 books in the collection.
So see, that's gorgeous. Like, I love that. Like, that's a complete circle. Like, that's a circle of life right there.
Yeah. When we started, the instruction to the illustrators on the first four books was that everything needed to happen in circles. And it just felt like the intuitive shape for me. You know, the stories, the hairdresser for unicorns, kids go crazy for that.
That was the one I went crazy for. I even wrote it down. I was like, I want to know about the unicorn, because it's all about self-love, right? It's the beauty within yourself.
Right. A lot of them thematically, that's one of the big themes. It is so important for all of us to be able to land into that. When we gift it to kids as part of their story time and they're young, it just goes in as language that they normalize. But often it's a parent who's doing that reading who's still trying to normalize it for themselves, right? Because they might not have had that support in that particular language, like us. I didn't, certainly, and I had to come back to this and go, oh, okay. This is a cross-generational thing. When we sit and we read stories together, we enter a world, we have a whole adventure, and we do it together, which is very key to what's happening in our brain and our nervous systems, our relaxation response. There's a lot of good things coming out of those 20 minutes of connection just before bed.
Well, I've had a lot of children's books on tea time, but I've never had bedtime stories. So what's the difference between children's books and bedtime stories?
Well, my TEDx is on why the last 20 minutes of the day matter. So these particular stories, they're certainly used in daytime. Lots of schools are working with them and having a lot of fun in story time during the day. But there's a couple of elements that are specifically designed for connection in my books. Every story starts with what we call a snuggle breathing meditation. And that's got four simple breaths in it. I think we'll take us through it in a moment. And then the other thing that happens in the back of the book is that there's a little integration conversation starting exercise. Oh. And what they're geared for is from a nervous system perspective. We as kids, we're constantly in the process of developing our safety strategies and part of that comes from our experiences of the day. And so if we had a rough experience on the playground that maybe no teacher knows about and we're trying to work out, we don't want to be bullied the next day. Well, all of this, a lot of churn that's happening. And if you go to sleep, like if you've ever been to sleep on an argument with a loved one, you know, you just don't get any sleep.
You're not sleeping good.
You wake up the next day, you're still arguing on the inside. It's like this little festering thing that happens. What we're trying to do through connection is the medicine that pulls that out of the system and let that space be filled up by relaxation. And so I'm very intentional in the stories of using the conversation starters. I say to parents, you can definitely put down the agenda of finishing the story. I don't need you to finish the story. What your child needs is for you to be present and available to them. And if you've got a kid who's really under 8 years old, chances are you've got to take them to bed and tuck them in anyway. Yeah. I didn't want to add anything to the parenting responsibilities because it's busy out there. I thought let's enable a practice and a tradition that's long held of bedtime stories, just to turn that a little bit and make it really attentive to the well-being of the child at that time. And in the process, we find it helps parents, because the biggest thing that parents worry about is, am I a good enough parent?
Yeah.
And they want to know that they're happening. Now we can't get that answer from our mind, but when we have that moment where this little one's eyes are twinkling and smiling and they're engaged, and maybe they open up that little thing about what happened on the playground because you're in this camaraderie space and it's a liminal space at the end of the day, they start chatting. They open up a whole lot more than they will after school. You pick them up after school, ask them how their day was, and they're like, well, I was fine.
That was the time where I bonded with my kids was bedtime, having that conversation, having that story and that. I wish these books would have been when my kids were young. My kids are in their 30s, so, you know, but the grandkids. So what was the first book that you wrote, Andrew?
First book. Is this one here? It's a little light. I was just hanging out. I lived in Scotland at the time. I used to write a lot of poetry. I took my journal on a walk, sat down somewhere on a hillside, and wrote a poem that I thought, the moment I wrote it, I thought, oh, it needs some pictures. And it wasn't anything more than that. It was a personal project for me. I had a friend called Rosie who became the illustrator. She had never made a kid's book before either. We worked it out very slowly. And then I didn't share it with anybody. It was
<It's> mine.
And the key reason for me not sharing it was that my creativity was very young and very delicate inside of me.
Okay.
And the trust of, I simply wasn't ready for the world to tell me what they didn't like about it. And so I protected it and I was fine to do that. We'd made it and I had it and that was what I wanted. And then I wrote another poem and it needed some more pictures, the fish who searched for water. And then there was the tree of goodness. And then the bee who couldn't choose her flower. And then all of a sudden I had four books and I was like, wait, what's happening here? I mean, I'm busy at the time. I'm studying, I'm learning about developmental psychology. I'm learning about our wounds, our trauma, belief formation. And then it becomes clearer that the stories I'm writing are very much a weave of what I'm studying and what I'm learning and a translation of it, because, you know, not everybody gets to jump in and do a 7-year curriculum on personal development. But once you're there, everybody's dealing with the same issues. We all got the same things going on. So let's see if we can catch some of the big themes and make them much more easily accessible and give us a response to it.
So Andrew, we have a question here. Have all your books started with a poem?
No, they're not all poetical. And they all start with this little, let's do the little breathing practice. But I've only got a couple that are rhyming at all. Most of them are narrative. And we can take you into, you know, some of the starting lines are quite interesting because they kind of set you up for the story. Once upon a time, there was a little light who intended to shine a rainbow so bright. So this is simple writing, right? This is early first expression. We come along to the hug book and it's like, once upon a time on a very ordinary day, deep in the center of a very ordinary heart, an extraordinary thing happens. Completely different, right?
And so
there's lots of evolution that happening in me as well as a creative and as a writer. This is the great love of rose and thorn. And it's very plain on the first page. It's very intentional to have that open space. And it says, there was once a time when roses had no thorns and thorns had no roses. Then rose met thorn. Theirs is the greatest love story of all time.
They had to find each other.
Yeah, they had to find
each other. I'm a real romantic, right?
She's so pretty and he's all prickly, you know, of course. So... We create worlds where there's heroic characters that have these heartfelt victories that our kids can learn from by falling in love with a character. And then when we fall in love and we do that little bit of merging with the character and the character gets into trouble, we feel it in our body. This is what movie makers know, right? They take us through this journey. And then as the character comes out and up the other side, of their challenge and they've gained a new skill or they've picked up a new relationship and a new friendship and a new self-awareness, then as the reader we get to carry that with us as well because we just borrow the character inside of us. That character lives and breathes.
Well, like you said, Andrew, reading your books, you get to know a little bit of who Andrew is. So you get to see the transformation of how you've changed with each of your books.
Yeah.
The growth in that. So you're almost like telling us the story of Andrew, but you're telling it in a different way.
In a way. Yeah. It's like you know how we do this thing with our phones? We like, we're both standing in the same moment next to each other, and I go click and you go click, and then I show you mine and go, look, and it's different, right?
Yeah.
That's it. This is just, all I'm really doing is saying to you, hey, here's my perspective. This is what I saw. This is what I noticed. When I held the lens up to my eye, this is what drew my attention in this wonderful world that we have. Let me share it with you. Maybe you'll like it too.
Yeah, I really like that. So I want to know about this snuggle breeding.
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah,
so let's everyone, go. Everyone who's with us can come along. We'll just do it. So it's four simple breaths. So breathing in, I breathe for me. Take a nice breath, I breathe for me. Now I breathe for you. I breathe for us. And I breathe for all that surrounds us.
So, Andrew, do you do this before you read your bedtime stories all the time?
Every story, every time. I actually use it in my team. We use it as a practice in the business. I often do it with my coaching clients when we're just settling in. It's a transition tool.
Ooh.
And how does it feel in you?
I feel more relaxed now. I'm ready. I feel like it's time to chill. It's time to get the slippers off and let's hear a story.
Yeah.
It's amazing how four little breaths takes you to a nice place.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting for the mothers out there, that first breath can actually be an interesting challenge, that I breathe for me. In the young years of kids, they're very merged with mum. That's healthy. There's an individuation that's happening. By the age of seven, they really start to have their own full identity and and lean in less. And for the transition for the woman from being single with no kids to maybe in relationship, but then all of a sudden there's two of you, right? And you're still trying to be the person who goes to work. You're still trying to be the person who has hobbies and a life. And then, but a lot of this, everything gets given to the little one. And so that it's a rescue breath for mum in some ways. I breathe for me. You have 100% permission and the right to have your own space. And actually it's important for the connection and the relationship with your little one that you have that, and that there's this separation and return is a big part of how our attachment system is being created and how health comes into it. Because if we don't take that breath for ourselves and we wait until we're overwhelmed, then we react in a way that's much more jarring. And that creates confusion in the attachment system of the child. And it's where the anxiety, the anxious attachment and and some of the avoidant attachment starts to come in, because the security gets challenged.
Well, it's almost like the snuggle breathing is giving the allowance of the connection to happen.
Right. Yeah. And because I wrote it and it's in the book, it's not mum saying, hey, we have to do the breathing. Look, it's in the book. You've got to do it.
It's in the book. We have to do it.
Yeah. And it's a little practice at the beginning, even for me. When I started with it, there were times that I kind of skipped over it. And I skipped over it once when I was reading the book to someone at a farmer's market. And she said to me, why did you skip over that? And I was like, I don't know. I got nervous or something. She's like, every story, every time. And since she said that to me, and as years ago, it's been every story, every time. And she was 100% right. And it's just, sometimes we feel a bit awkward when we're trying something new. And so, you know, expect to feel awkward. I used to, when I was inventing the snuggle breathing, practiced with a kid who was 3 years old, and funny little guy. He used to, some days he'd do it, and other days, like, I'm not doing the snuggle breathing. And be like, I'd be like, oh, okay. I said, look, I just feel like I want to take a couple of breaths. You don't have to. And he'd be like, he'd be like, I'm holding it. Breathing. And I'd take the slowest four breaths, you know. but that same 3-year-old, I got to hang out with him when he was 6. I was just babysitting, his folks were away, and I was having a bit of a sad day, and he was aware of it. I hadn't hit it. It's one of the principles that I believe that we have transparency. It saves us from our kids needing to guess how we're doing. And we're tucked into a pillow fort on the sofa. I'm reading Harry Potter because that's where he was at. And he spotted the sadness, and he reached out to me. His little hand came through the pillow fort, and he said, let's do that thing you like to do at the start of your stories. And I was like, that broke me open. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, I'm being gifted back the medicine that I've offered out, and that here it is coming back to me from a child who's just had it in their orbit. And I'm like, if we got a generation of kids growing up with practices, this practice and others like this, then we're really going to be creating a wonderful world of adults who are regulated, calm, able to center, know how to work with their emotions way better. And that just, it just ripples generation after generation. We know we're on this journey of improving between generations.
So within these 20 books, Andrew, they're based on emotions and feelings?
They're going to, so some folks in the writing category of social emotional learning will be much more direct than I am. You can see in that story of, I'm interested more in the fable. I mean, I'm cautious about the word parable, but it's like the way that there's a story that's pointing to things, but you it's not a straight shot that says if this, then that. Because at different ages, we're going to understand different nuances of this. How about I read us The Hug Who Got Stuck, and then we can pick that up, and because it's a great theme.
Absolutely. I'm all for a story.
Okay, good. Well, we did just do our snuggle breathing, which is wonderful. So I feel like we've got a segue in. The book is dedicated to all who hug. Let me just shift a little bit so that I can really get the pictures in the right place for you. Give me one second, but that light will be better. There we go. Okay. Once upon a time, on a very ordinary day, deep in the center of a very ordinary heart, an extraordinary thing happened. Deep in the center of this heart was a hug factory. Now you know where hugs are made. The hug factory made the most warm, cozy, cuddly hugs. Now we've got a super cool hug factory that's got all sorts of things. There's the door of the heart. Little hugs come zooming in. They go up. They get caught. Their love gets caught on the solar panels. The solar panels powers the big green battery. Big green battery fills up. There's the baby hugs growing in a forest of trees. That are hydroponically drip fed by stardust, rainbow light, and that's a basket of warm, fuzzy feelings. A great adventure. The kids find their way through it. Each hug was freshly made and specially encoded with just the right amount of love and care to delight the heart it was made for. A little encoding going on. And being a hug wasn't always easy. Sometimes a lonely thought or bad feeling would trap a hug in a sticky web.
Oh.
Now we see horrible, nobody loves me, who cares, I'm all alone.
I didn't even notice that, Andrew, until you started saying them.
Yeah, they're just tucked in there. Oh. And that's what it's like with these thoughts, right? They're just tucked in there. We have them, but we can't really see them all the time. So to help hugs deliver their love and care, it was a big sign on the factory wall. Reminders to being a great hug. right? Number one, breathe in love to glow brightly. Two, focus entirely on the heart, the lovers. Four, and three, don't pay too much attention to the web of sticky thoughts. Now, on most days, you could see streams of hugs leaving the door of the heart, zooming away like bees from a hive, but not on this day. On this day, there was a problem. Uh-oh. One special hug on its way out of the heart got stuck. Very, very stuck. Oh, no. Don't know. This hug had forgotten the third rule. It fought against the web of sticky thoughts to get free, but every wriggle and squirm trapped the hug even more. Mm-hmm. Soon the hug ran out of breath and lost its glow. Uh-oh. Right? Inside, the heart became horribly congested with crowds of hugs waiting to get out. Unused hugs were put into boxes until every inch of space was filled up. Outside the heart, there was also a problem. A traffic jam of visiting hugs couldn't get in to deliver their special love and care.
Oh, no.
Exactly. Right? Soon the factory stopped making new hugs. It's like, it's just how bad is this going to get? It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And it's like, there was only one stuck hug in the center of one ordinary heart, but all around the world, hugs lost a little of their glow.
Oh.
It's like, ouch. It's like, this is the affect of you. You and your heart being closed has an effect on the entire world. Right. So let's see what we can do about this now. Let's see if we can.
Yeah, let's tighten it up a bit.
Yeah. Right. The hug sighed helplessly. And let's all take a sigh together, and it's like we start the relaxation. It stopped wriggling, stopped squirming, and stopped fighting. In that moment, something magical happened.
Oh, she's got some magic power.
As it stopped wriggling, it breathed in love and glowed brightly. As it stopped squirming, it remembered the heart it was made for. As it stopped fighting, it slipped right past the web of sticky thoughts. Free!
Oh, look at that! She got out!
She got out! Yay! The hug glowed brighter and brighter, zooming away toward the one special heart it was made for. The hug factory clinked and whirled back to life. A flood of hugs passed in and out of the heart, each delivering their special love and care. Yay! Let's see what happens to the world. It was just one hug who got unstuck in the center of one ordinary heart, and all around the world, an extraordinary softening happened.
The lightness. Oh my goodness, the brightness.
Yeah, there we go. The colors are back.
Yeah.
We've got so dark there for a moment in the middle. Now, we can chat about the story, but just so that you know, there's your daily hug meter.
Okay.
You can count how many hugs you've had. There was the founder of family therapy, a lady called Virginia Satir, said that we need 4 hugs a day to survive, 8 to maintain, and 12 to thrive.
Well, look at that. We need a lot of hugs.
Yeah.
Everybody start hugging.
Everybody start. Let's go. Come on.
Let's start a hug marathon here.
I've got my Hug Factory t-shirt on, so we can do some Zoom hugs. And we do this with the kids. Well, I do school visits, and I like to do immersions. I was just author in residence for 2 weeks at a school. We had the kids making stories. We were reading stories. We're talking about being an author, all of their questions, lots of fun. And we get them to send Zoom hugs. So just think of a person you're making a hug for that maybe you won't see in a long time, or maybe you'll see later today. I think my sister, she's on the other side of the world. So I think of my sister, and we rub our hearts, we take a big breath in, hold it, and 3, 2, 1, zoom.
Oh my goodness. I love it. I love it.
Are they going?
And all the children out there are loving this right now because, you know, we get free story time on tea time, right?
Yeah.
Just before bed. all the children are going to bed for evening tea time. So this is a perfect time for bedtime stories.
Well, how was it for you as an adult to have a story read to you?
It was amazing. I'm a big kid at heart. So like, I was like, oh no, it's stuck in the web.
That's right. That's the roller coaster. We want you to come on that journey. You know, it's because when the hug came out, you got the uplift.
Yeah.
As well. Your body, your physiology literally got that. And it's like, oh, great.
Well, even the facial expressions and the illustrations, when she was stuck, there was no, it was like a gloom face. And then when she got free, it was a big happy smile going on. Like, right.
So as adults, we certainly know that our head closes our heart, right?
Yeah.
And not all, I mean, not always, they can work together. And that's the point. Let's get them to work together. Yeah. Now we got a little bit more of a narrative around it. And our kids will keep an eye on it just because they read a story.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get in, now that you've read me a story, I want to do my thing and I want to get into your tea and I want you to spill a good strong cup of tea here because you gave me the words touch, emotion, and attachment.
Yes.
And that was all in that story.
Yes.
So what do those words mean to you, Andrew?
Well, so one of the other dynamics of me as a child and that the emotional landscape was very blank. It wasn't connection and rapport. No one ever sat with me to say, hey, when you behave like that, it doesn't work so well. Well, how about you can, why don't you try this? Like a mentorship. It just didn't exist. And as an adult, when I came to my own personal work, that's when I realized it was missing. Like I didn't even know it was missing because that's what I grew up with. And then I was like, oh no, hold on. Other people had different worlds than I did. I had to learn to hug in my early 20s. It wasn't natural by any means. And that's because personal contact was either not available or in the schooling environment was hostile. And, you know, boys, rugby, sports, you know, that was, the sensitive kid in me didn't work so well. So I learned touch as an adult, and in the process of learning it, it was like, oh, there's actually some teachable things here.
Yeah.
I was doing work with animals at one stage. Then I was doing work with patients in coma at another time. And their primary, one of their primary communication lines is touch. And then when I discovered the world of hands-on healing, I was amazed that these beautiful things are so intimately connected to my heart. And so when we climb into bed to snuggle together for bedtime story, as opposed to read the story from across the room, you know, then we come in and we create that connection point where the physical condition, the warmth of the body, which it may sound so obvious, but that's because it is, and it's because we all organically should have it and would have it. But there's still a big gaps in it for kids where touch isn't safe. So that became something that I wanted to explore for myself and wanted to encourage folks to do. If I had my magic wand over the whole world, I would have everybody learn how to work with the energetics of touch. But in the simplest version that we can do right here, it's like the mindfulness, when the hand touches the body, there's a way that, you know, we can come in rough, we can come in super soft, we can come in connected or disconnected. We just hold that awareness and then we choose the one that we want rather than letting it just happen. If you want to make more connection, be gentler. If you want to make more connection, stay longer, not with movement, in one place. And if you try like sinking the hand, as if it's dropping in, then you create intimacy through that. And it's as simple as that. We may do it, you know, someday you just rub the dog like this, and another day you put your hand on the dog and you're just like, you really kind of, it's just there.
Yeah, you kind of just let it sit there.
Yeah, it's just there. It's the dog's on the sofa next to you, and you're hanging out, you're watching telly, and yet there's a sense of a deepening into the relationship that comes through that. That's what I'm talking about with touch. It's like it's superbly comforting for the regulation system, for the nervous system, for the heart, just for the sense of do I belong? Like, do I belong in this family? Am I actually welcome here? Because our existential, look, I'm a bit of a black sheep, and there's a lot of us out there who's like,
I'm the black sheep of the family, so I know that one.
You get it, right? So it's the energy and the effort that takes. And when we grow up as a young kid feeling like we don't belong, we're not necessarily loved in the way that we truly met, then all other relationships later in our life start to imagine they're going to be the same way.
Yeah.
So the belief system starts to predict that. And so that's touch.
I think it's really important that we're talking about this, because we don't talk about touch. No, like the nice connection touch.
Yes.
Where even just holding hands, the way we hold hands, the way fingers are placed when we're holding a hand, if it's closed or if in between the fingers, you know, we're not talking about that. We're not teaching children about this.
Right. We're certainly not. But what happens when you bump your knee? What's the first thing that happens is your hands go to it. Right. It's actually innate. It's what we do. We kind of like rub it and go, ow. That's how natural this is for us. And yet there is an aspect where, for a number of reasons in society, touch has become a concern in the adult child dynamic. I'm very aware of it as a visiting guest into a school environment. To ask, to watch, to see, particularly a man, you know, there's some projections that come onto men around that, and they're fair,
But I think even just holding hands, Andrew, we're not doing that anymore. We're not connecting, because what do we have? We have this in our hands instead, right? So we're not even holding hands. We're holding this instead, right. You know, And I think that's where the disconnect is coming.
Yeah. And then we can play, right? We can, you know, the itsy bitsy spider, right? Now we got play. We've got these little contact points. I'm a student and a big fan of a body of social emotional work called conscious discipline. One of the things that they do at the start of their school day or engagement is something called a brain smart start. And they're very mindful of the hands. You know, if you were right in front of me now, we'd play a little game like this. And I would say, copy me. And we've got double, double.
Oh, yeah. The
double, games are double, this, double, double, that, double, this, double, that, double, double, this, that.
I remember doing that in school.
Remember that, right?
Yeah. Now,
and look at the laughter. Look at the smile. That's what we're actually looking for. We want, like, let's activate that. Dopamine rushes through the brain. The kids focus better after doing that.
Yeah.
So it's another transition tool that I can recommend folks exploring.
So what do you, how do you feel about strings, the touch of strings? You know how we used to play the hand games with the strings, where you take the strings, you wrap the strings around little fingers.
And you fold it in. And
yeah.
You make a form, and then you let it all go, and you do it again.
It kind of like a web, right? It kind of reminds me of the story that you just told us. Like, you got caught in the webs, and I didn't notice the words in the webs until you started saying them, and then all of a sudden, my eyes were engaging into the words, and I was like, "Oh." And that's kind of what life is about, right? We get caught in these webs sometimes, and we don't see the picture. We don't see a solution on how to get out or how to move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I loved story time. It was really amazing, you know. And that's what we need is that connection as well, that open dialogue and communication.
Yeah. And so communication on all the levels. So touch is one of the channels through which communication is happening. And then how do we allow emotions? How do we teach kids? It's actually really challenging for us, because when our 5-year-old drops to the floor in aisle 3 of the supermarket and throws a tantrum, we feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
Actually nothing to do with us.
Nope.
Right? They're in the process of expressing themselves. Their energy is moving them. They're much more free with it than we are. And then we're looking around to go, who's going to see that I'm a bad parent? What does a child need? Child needs your presence. Child needs your touch. Child needs your compassion. Oh, you were hoping that you could get an ice cream. I'm so sorry that we can't have one now, but we're definitely doing one after lunch tomorrow. You're teaching in that moment, and you're offering connection and compassion. And we've got to learn how to attend to our own reactions first, whether it's conscious discipline and Dr. Becky Bailey, or whether it's Oprah's favorite parenting person, Dr. Shefali. It's adult first. And from a brain function perspective, we're a little bit like a flock of birds, right? You never see one take off in a fright. The whole flock just goes. Yep. And so there we are in a kindergarten class, and one kid goes from an executive brain state into an activated a survival state. Back of the brain kicks in, and they go into drama. And every other brain in the room goes, what's happening? Because we collectively assess our safety as well as individually.
Yeah.
Now, if you're the adult in that space who rushes right across to help that child, then you come in with a survival brain to help them with a survival brain, and you can't get anywhere. The mirror neurons are only going to continue to exaggerate the danger response. But if you can pause and you can go, I wish you well, this is the breath we take, pause, breathe, wish you well. And we've practiced that a little. We can quickly re-regulate from the survival to the executive, and then we can step into support. Now our executive brain is whispering to their survival brain that they're safe. And that level of communication changes all sorts of things. To help them, look, I'm around someone who's calm. Maybe that's an option for me. And they come in, and this is the path of attunement. And in a way, the A for attunement, A for attachment. It's if they're at the beginning of the school year, when you've got new kids, the kindergarten teacher can't get this level of settledness. But if you take an intention and work with the kids, the level comes in. And it's the same with the reading and the snuggle breathing. When you start, the kids don't necessarily match your breathing or regulate with you. As you do it more, it becomes a shared experience more and more. You can then be in the kitchen and they're on the sofa in the sitting room, and you can connect across that distance, and you can match their breathing, and you can regulate and co-regulate from across the room.
So Andrew, I noticed that you do a lot of words and pauses and breathing. So do you do that with different activities that you do as well with children?
Yeah, there can be. There's always something. There's always a regulation. So I was doing story time at a school just around the corner from me, and the energy levels in the room got sort of louder, and we do them pick up something which is like balloon breathing. You know, do that 3 times, and the kids are all doing that. Their body's engaged, their brain's coming online. Yeah, all the time.
So it kind of brings that connection, right? The breathing brings a connection to the joining.
Yeah, I'm thinking about little gadgets. There's a story here called Ellie Jumps a Mile, and it's the very first time that Ellie gets a fright in her life. She's never had a fright, and then she sees a mouse. And then all of a sudden now she's got these symptoms, right? Her hands are sweating, her heart is pounding, her thoughts are racing. She doesn't know what it is. And her friends say to her, oh, it looks like you're scared. And she's like, what do I do? And the answer, of course, lies in breathing. And so it's built right into the book. And you can't help but do it. There's Ellie, you can't see her head. She's taking in this big, deep breath. And there's a page turn here. You get to see what she's doing. She's blowing out.
Oh, well, look at that. She blows out the birthday candles.
Yeah, she blows out the birthday candles. So as you read the story, you go, because you're reading the story and you're just taking the breath. It's just
well, like, it kind of reminds me of birthday candles, right? Yes. You tell children to take a pause, make a wish, and then blow the candles.
Absolutely. Smell, I mean, teachers all know, smell the flowers and blow the windmill. You know, it's like, it's the same.
So are you big into nursery rhymes?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, no. There's a few fun ones from my childhood, but I'm not really hanging out. Why do you ask?
Well, you like the spider one, don't you?
Oh, the itsy bitsy spider.
Well, yeah, I think back to the hug machine, right? Because the web is there. Charlotte's web, like the webs. You know, and it opens up the magical world of imagination as well. Because when you look at a spider web, you see magic, right? You're like, this little thing created something. Like, what? How did this happen?
Yeah, that's a great observation. Yeah.
So, Andrew, if anybody would like to reach out to you and know more about your books and that, how could they reach you?
ConsciousStories.com, straightforward. Come and visit. We've got resources for teachers there, for parents. Great collection. There's, as I said, 23 books there. The social media side is Instagram under Conscious Bedtime Stories. We're looking a little bit at TikTok, but there's not much there for now.
And, so are
and you? If you've got a school you want me to come and speak at, please just reach out in our contact form on the website. And we'll look. I'm particularly interested in school visits after the new year starts in that first quarter.
So, Andrew, do you have any upcoming new books, or is that it? The 20 books are done, and you're starting a new series.
Come with me.
Oh! He's taking us on a journey.
Yeah, we take you on a journey. So, the last step before a book goes to print is that I do a printout and it goes up on the walls so that I can proofread it. So this is a book called The Missing Angels. And these three kids that you're seeing are best friends, and they hang out in a treehouse that they think is the angel club. And Nimbus, who's the boy in the middle, he's a little bit older. And as he grows up, he loses his sight with the angels. Sorry about the noise in the background. he needs some support to get back to that. That should be a little better. His friends help him rebuild the connection. So it's just part of my process. I get all of the pictures up. It's the first time we see it in print. There's things that you see differently from when you see it on screen, and we make our final revisions. This book will be out in about October. It takes you know, a year from start to finish on a good run. Often I've got stories now that I'm writing and thinking about and revisiting, and they're pottering around in the background, and I don't know yet which one's going to rise to the surface and become the next book. We're thinking dragons, you know, it's time for dragons.
Oh, dragons. Oh yeah. We've had a couple of dragon stories on Tea Time. I love dragons. Yeah. I find there's a big story to dragons that, you know, a lot of people have perceptions that dragons are mean and evil, and I think they're really friendly. It's like Pete and Magic Dragon. Like, you know, there's a lot of character behind a dragon. Like,
personality.
Yeah, like character, like, you know, they got big feet, they got long tails, you know, big ears or little ears or, you know, purple noses. Like, you just never know what they it'll look like.
You got bad adventures.
Well, and thank you for that. So for all of your books, Andrew, is it the same illustrator or do you have like different illustrators for each book?
That's a great question. No, there's a couple of different illustrators. There's probably been five over the collection. Lethal with the Ellie. Where am I? There's a little, like, you can see like a almost a pencil line kind of sketchy feel to that, which is great. Alexis, who did The Great Love of Rose and Thorn, and she did The Hug Story. It's a slightly different feel. One of the other ones that actually probably the hardest book that I've written so far is How Diablo Became Spirit. And it was difficult because 7 million people have watched the YouTube video about this true story.
Oh.
And so I didn't get to create the world. I had to conform to the world that's already created. And it's on YouTube by the same name. A beautiful documentary about this black leopard who was really about to be euthanized because he was so hostile and wouldn't come out of his night shelter. And they brought in an animal whisperer who came and communicated with him, and everything changed its path. And the video of that is a tearjerker, and kids just love the story. It's great.
Wow. And I noticed that's the only book that you have that's a dark color. All the other colors are really bright and vibrant.
Yeah, pretty much. Just keep it like a rainbow, you know?
Yeah, I noticed that. See, I pay attention.
It had to be black. I mean, he's such a powerful animal. This is spirit. And
the cover is gorgeous.
So the illustrator Alexis went to the wildlife sanctuary, which is in South Africa, and sat there and sketched, just spent the day around. She says he, like a normal leopard, he has spots, but they're black spots on a black fur, which is fascinating. It's this little, all you see if you look super closely is a different direction of the fur.
Oh.
Otherwise, you wouldn't even know they're there.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I always like learning new things, and my listeners always like learning because Miss Liz kind of goes in her little wacky little kind of unique way of asking questions and digging a little deeper. So, you know, and I love playing with my guests. Like, I love having story times and music and, you know, just bringing something different to the table. And that's what you've done tonight, Andrew, is you brought something different to the table. Like, you know, we learned a little bit of breathing and we got a story. And for all my audio listeners, you got to go get the book so that you could see the amazing story and illustrated pictures that we're showing tonight on Tea Time. So, Andrew, what's your final message to everybody out there?
Well, to the parents who are here having this conversation with us and listening in, you're doing great. You're doing great. The fact that you're here, that you're engaged in the conversation, good enough. Relax and go and have some fun with your kids.
I love it. I you know, and we really got to start connecting to our children and spending more time. And bedtime is a time to snuggle. Get that snuggle breathing in there. And like you said at the beginning, as a mom and as a grandma, it's hard to say, I allow myself to breathe. You know, I give myself that moment to breathe. Because it's hard sometimes. We're so rush, and okay, it's bedtime, go to bed, and good night, I need my peace. You know, where if you take that 20 minutes and you just do a story time, you'll make a big difference. And I honestly believe that bedtime is a way of connecting with your children so that the next day they can have an enjoyable day at school as well. And they're a little less hard on the teacher sometimes, because a lot of my kids' teachers were, what are you doing with your kids? And I said, well, they're in bed at 7:30. So
good night's sleep changes everything, right?
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Andrew, for joining me and sharing a good cup of tea with me tonight. I want to thank the listeners and audience. And And if you're watching these tea times later, push hashtag replay. Let me know where you're tuning in from. If you have any questions and you would like to know more about Andrew, you can always send Miss Liz a message and I will connect you. I really enjoy having these open educational conversations with my guest and with my listeners as well, because my listeners sometimes they'll ask me a question and get me engaged as well. So thank you for that. We will be back on March 11th, not a Thursday. I think it's a Tuesday, if I remember right. I think so. It's a Tuesday. We're going to be in and we'll be doing a special tea time on Empowered to Recover, an addiction service that is for the people, works by the people. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to have two other tea times on Thursday. So tune in for that. And we will make a difference with one cup of tea at a time. And don't forget to breathe. And don't forget that bedtime story. So until then, I will see everybody on March 11th with a special tea time.
Thank you.